Welcome to the Pints and Polishing Podcast, the most influential and listened to podcast in auto detailing. Welcome to the community.
Hi, welcome to the Pints and Polishing Podcast. I'm Marshall. That's Nick. You can find us at hypercleanstore.com, where you can go see actually a new product today that got launched, hypercleanstore.com. Or go to the specialist group that is on Facebook. You can interact there. All right, Nick, I'm hopping into another Skydance Brewing Fancy Dance. I've told you before, this is one of my new favorite local craft beers. Big supporter, as always, of the craft market here in Oklahoma. This is a hazy IPA. I'm loving it. You get into your buy and sell.
Well, I'm going to buy something a little strange, but I think everybody will understand what I mean. We had a pretty active January on detailing social media. Let's say it that way. A lot of positive, a lot of negative, a lot of, you know, we've been joking in group text, you and myself and some other people, about just how wild the start to the year was on social media. For those that didn't listen last week, I was in Arizona. Arizona is a real hotbed for detailing. You know, it really is. I mean, it's on par with LA and Houston, and they really have a bustling detailing business down there. And I think what I'm buying is getting out of thinking that social media is detailing. That could be a YouTube influencer. That could be a professional. That could, whatever you want to, you know, say about the internet. And you know this as well as I do. When you take these trips, you always go, man, there's a lot of people doing a lot of cool stuff. Right? You know, we've seen people who started their business, maybe wanted to get out a time or two. You walk into their business and it's just booming. And you go, hell yeah, man. Like, great to see. You see some other things here and there. I know we'll touch on some later in the episode. But what I'm buying is, I can't stress this enough, that social media and the detailing world as a whole is not what you see when you go hang out with a variety of people in different shops. It's just not even close. It's night and day. Most of those people don't even know what's going on the internet. They're like, what happened? What do you mean? Hadn't seen that. And so what you realize is, as you go to these shops that are doing really well, they're not engaged in detailing social media, Facebook groups, you know, YouTube, whatever the case may be. Maybe they make some of those things themselves. You know, they make YouTubes for their shop or whatever, but they don't go watch detailing YouTube. They don't go into a Facebook group. They don't see all the negative. They just don't have the time. And being around that last week, it made me really, really excited, not only about my business, but HyperClean and other things. We had some people in from out of the country that met us down there, some awesome projects you and I are working on. And so for anybody out there, I think those trips can be positive once or twice a year. They certainly are for me, where I'm just, and again, you have to have relationships. You know, you can build those over the internet. Don't just go walk into somebody's shop out of the blue and they have no idea who you are. That'd be a little odd. But if you have good relationships and you've built some relationships with people and you just want to go and say, hey, man, I'd like to come hang out for an hour. I went and grabbed some lunch with a couple shops. You realize that the internet really skews our view on what's taking place in detailing. And what I'm buying is, again, I went there last year. I went there early this year and I just meet cool people. Doesn't mean we always see eye to eye on everything, but it's like a lot to learn. Hey, they're doing it this way. That's cool. They're doing it this way. I wouldn't do that. You know, you just kind of get a view. But what you don't really see till you see it is the vast majority of us just aren't participating in this detailing social media world.
No, no, definitely not. It's fun to go into all those shops, isn't it? To see everybody's different spin, the way they set up their shop, the way they roll cars through, what their customer interaction's like. I miss it. I really do. There's part of me that misses going around and meeting all the guys in their shops and sitting there and watching them and talking to them, hanging them out, getting used to knowing who they are, talking about their family and all that. Yeah. But that's what a lot of us have to do. exactly what you did. Go into shops, go start talking to people, and begin the discussion. That's how you get to this point. And you find some great stuff that we'll talk about later. It's true. I'm actually selling, Nick. I'm selling. It's been a run for me too. I've been buying quite a bit, but listen, your Friday episode that came out on Saturday, I'm selling a part of it, and I had to talk to HR. HR is, I guess they have officially been, they drank the wrong Kool-Aid. And, you know, I had a comment about the four-door, two-door, and HR, I guess, didn't go with me. So I'm selling HR. HR didn't help me one bit here.
Hey, you're just taking arrows when you're not even around.
Yeah, like, great episode, man. I wanted to say that. You did a great job, especially after the long week. And you could tell a little bit. Like, I listened, yeah, I was like, yeah, Nick's had a week, you know.
I was struggling. I even had to say it on the episode. One of the answers, I was like, hey, man, this may not have come out the right way, but it's late at night. I'm recording it all by myself. I'm talking directly into a wall in the hotel room, like the whole nine.
The cool part, though, is how the questions are evolving. And we're getting into some pretty good, like, not that good's the wrong word. We're getting into more in-depth, yeah, and some very unique questions, which are fun. I love seeing that.
I think, like I said, we try to do that about once every 4 to 5 weeks is about what we average. And it's absolutely getting better. Right? Guys are feeling more comfortable. If you're not in the HyperClean Specialist group, join, just so I know a lot of you have questions, whether that's detailing your own car or, I mean, we get so many emails and I feel like saying this to people, but it's kind of hard because we don't have the episode every week or whatever, but we get a lot of emails that I go, hey man, I wish you just go in the specialist group. And when an Ask Me Anything comes up, go ask these questions. Because you're really asking a lot of questions and you're trying to get your feet wet, go into that group and get your feet wet in that group. You know, I'm telling you the way the world's going. Marty, you and I have talked about this. Companies, once they start to scale and they get bigger, I saw this in another Facebook group of a supplier that's growing massively. You know, it's hard to manage the email questions. Really, Facebook groups are becoming that place for brands like ours where you can go and plug into not just Marty and Nick and our team, but you can plug into close to 1,000 people and growing massively every day that'll go in and they just can't wait to tell you, hey, here's my experience. Hey, use it this way. Great question. Let me walk you through it. You have a more immediate reaction. And I think if you use the specialist group properly, nobody in our group thinks any questions out of bounds. I mean, I went back and forth with a guy for a very long time about our lineup of car soaps. And it's like, it's hard to say this over email and not sound like you're pawning it off, but it's like, man, you really need to be in the specialist group because these guys use the soap literally all across the world now. They're going to be able to answer your question more quickly. They're going to be in more depth because, again, over email, we're just trying to get the basics to you. And so I think what we see with the Ask Me Anything is, like you said, man, I mean, they're just better and better questions.
Mm-hmm. And the fun stuff, too, happening in the specialist group, even though we didn't get to see any of the pictures that you saw happening in Phoenix of the bad parking, but Tim's and some others have started to put some bad parking. Listen, we had Tim's actually caught a guy in the middle of the bad parking, which, you know, that's always fun when you catch him right in the middle of it. So some people also have been asking, what about my next purchase, right? You even asked. We've tossed back and forth. One of the models, one of the things I am looking at is a Porsche Cayenne. Is it because we had three of them here while you and I were working on cars? Maybe that had a little subliminal influence. I'm not sure. Subliminal, maybe the same way other people announce themselves as Pints and Polishing Podcasts when they're not on the podcast. Yeah, maybe it's sort of like that one. that was interesting, wasn't it? All right, if you know on that one. But so I've been in a group. The Porsche Cayenne, it's an interesting vehicle. I'm starting to see them. You can get a 10-year-old that's not even 100,000 miles, and it's a $20,000, 26 grand. There's one in Chicago right now that has 80,000 miles, and he wants 25.
Yep.
I mean, okay, you know, what happens after that, of course, you get that model of that late of a vehicle. You know, you definitely probably want to try to get something lower, I imagine. But some of the interesting parts, too, that you find people asking is, what do you do? There's some headlights that get covered over. Anybody seen the Porsche Cayennes that have the full on, they want to be murdered out, but then they murder out the headlights too? I mean, some people really want to know though. That's a bit trashy, don't you think? That doesn't seem right with being a Porsche.
Yeah, I look at blacked out taillights, headlights, that kind of thing. I get the look. I get wanting to do it. The part I've never been into is making it harder for people to see me and my brake lights. I don't really want to get, you know, I got rear-ended at somebody going 80 miles an hour in California. I think you and I had just gotten together as partners in Hyperclean when that happened, or pretty close anyway.
Yeah.
And I never wanted to do that to my car. I understand the look aspect. I mean, if you want to stealth your car and you want to murder it out, it's a logical thing to do because those can look kind of goofy. The only thing I never really understood is I didn't want to do anything to my headlights and make it harder for me to see. And I didn't want people rear-ending me because they couldn't see my brake lights. So there's always been a trade-off. I certainly understand it. I've done some of those conversions for people in my career, because they wanted it, but I look at it and I've always just kind of been like, not really my thing.
All right. So a real true question that I've had when I'm looking at, cause I literally thinking about, okay, I know I'm not exactly excited about buying a vehicle that has 100,000 miles already on it, but it gets me into a Porsche that I can start experiencing it if I like it or not. And listen, the ones I've driven, I think I could probably drive this for a while. And I don't have any major things for a couple years, I'm good. But I don't know if I could go back that far in technology, though. Having a Porsche and having something like that with the engine and all that, but not being able to do Bluetooth or CarPlay. I know there's people that are questioning that inside of that group. I would also question that, too.
Well, 10 years ago, they had Bluetooth, right?
Say again?
10 years ago, they had Bluetooth in those.
10? Okay.
Yeah, but I don't. They definitely didn't have Apple CarPlay.
Uh-uh.
And this has like been an interesting thing to me. So I have a 2008 BMW that I had to wire up for Bluetooth. It didn't even have Bluetooth. So I had to rip it apart, run it through my center console, and wire it for Bluetooth connectivity. So, and I had to do that on a BMW X5. I've had to do that on a lot of things. An old Tahoe I had, Jeeps. If you had older Jeeps, of course, those weren't wired for anything. If it has Bluetooth connectivity, and here's what I've never understood about the Apple CarPlay thing. So I have Apple CarPlay in a family vehicle, and I had it in the van I drove in Arizona. What's the big deal about Apple CarPlay? Why are people so like enamored with it? It's cool and all, but if I have Bluetooth connectivity, I essentially have Apple Car. I mean, I can map whatever I need on my phone. It'll go through the Bluetooth system. I'll be able to listen to music or a podcast or whatever off my phone. What's the big thing that people get bent out of shape about with the Apple CarPlay thing?
Nick, are you like an undercover Apple user? Did you not really take a bite of the Apple? You didn't do that?
Well, I think you know this. I have Apple everything. I just don't understand what the fascination with Apple CarPlay is. Do you?
That's my point. You didn't really bite the Apple. That's why people are fascinated. I'm with you. And that's why I've talked about when I rent a car and it seems strange, you know, but I just always go back to it. I can go into a Ford and their sync technology and everything that operates in there, I just a couple little buttons back and forth. I hit the code and away I go. Everything's great. We sit down. So as you know, and a lot of us know, we got a Rogue. It's a 2023 Rogue. I love so much about it. I don't love CarPlay in it. I'm not a tall play guy.
I know. People get bent, though. People get bent out of shape about it.
Do you, when you're on your iPhone, if you're on Spotify, it'll click over to that car mode? I've got to get it off of the car mode.
I don't even like that either.
Yeah, I got to get that off too. But I know there's some technology inside of the Nissan, you know, the way they're doing everything, where they do specifically right in the middle want you to be inside of some type of sync system. Yeah. Maybe it's got to be with, you know, keeping you off your phone. You know, I bet you that's a lot of it.
Sure.
You know,
CarPlay is great. I don't have anything against CarPlay. I just can't imagine, like, for anybody that hasn't seen the fiasco that is the Dodge TRX, like the Ram TRX, excuse me. I know people get bent out of shape. Their whole system. I mean, they now have the league leader in screwed up infotainment technology. Like sometimes the stuff doesn't, I mean, you can't even sync your phone, right? I get it. You know, Cadillac had the Q system, which was a complete disaster. I get it. If you have something that's just non-functional, you're like, this would just be easier if it was CarPlay. I get that. But as long as I can Bluetooth my phone, I've never gotten that bent out of shape about anything.
And I think it's also got to be when some of those, now you get to those upper screens that got so much on it, is that the actual phone shows up on that screen to where they can work and everything is right there, that it mirrors their phone.
Yeah. You know what? We're talking cars. So I'm going to, I'm rental Ricky right now. Okay. I got my Lexus SUV is in the shop getting body work. So we got a 4Runner. Let me tell you something that couldn't be less accurate in the car world right now, okay? When you buy a Lexus SUV, and we got the big Lexus SUV, people always say, well, that's just a 4Runner. Let me tell everybody right now, it's not a 4Runner. I can't imagine what people are paying for these 4Runners.
It's not a Lexus?
Mine's not a lot. Yeah, don't get me started, Marty, because everybody knows I'm taking heat in my family because it's not an exact replica of what we have in the body shop. But when you drive a Lexus, and I don't drive it all that often, but I drive it enough, and then you drive this 4Runner, and there'll be all these people in forums. Well, I don't buy the Lexus because it's just a 4Runner, so I'll just get the 4Runner. Couldn't be further from the truth. The interior's worse. Okay. The driving experience is worse. Everything is worse. So for all you that always go, well, that's just a ... when somebody buys the more expensive version, it's always not true. I mean, again, people will say this all the time. Well, the Audi Q8, that's basically a Lamborghini Urus. No, it isn't. I mean, in some aspects, it's a Audi interior. But when you fire it up, nothing about it is like driving the Q8. Doesn't mean the Q8's not a good vehicle. I would certainly own one, and I would certainly drive one. I would never tell myself, well, you know, it's just a Urus. No, it's not. There are subtle differences that you're going to notice over time and go, yeah, I'm driving a Lambo. Now, can we all make the argument it's an Audi product, that, you know, that it's identical, the interior? Sure, I can make those arguments. And there's some that are very overlapping. In the Toyota family, what I've experienced, not overlapping. And what people are paying for these 4Runners, I can't imagine just not buying a 1 or 2 year old Lexus and getting the nicer of everything, the interior. By the way, the space on the same platform. Like trying to put a stroller and some groceries in the 4Runner compared to a stroller and some groceries in the Lexus. Day and night. I don't know where all the space went, Marty. I'm not a Toyota engineer. Not there.
Gone.
It's not there. And so for all you that always say, well, that's just a ... It isn't. Now, American brands, there are some that are pretty egregious with their behaviors. And everything's a little bit too similar. And it's bargain parts from all different cars into the nice car. I get that part. And there's some of that crossover in the Lexus and other SUVs. But there's something different when you fire up that Lexus SUV, you get your family in it, there's more room, there's nicer interior. So I got to sell it. I don't know what people see in these 4Runners. Never. Never if I took that thing on a test drive would I own one. I don't get it. I would just buy a couple-year-old Lexus at that point.
Yeah, I can totally understand that, right? Like, that's part of my issue. What I'm trying to think through is, do I get a 10-year-old vehicle, but it gets me into the Porsche world, or, you know, the Audi of where I step up? Because, or this is the next on the list, and it rightfully so, from exactly what you're saying, would be Infiniti.
Yeah, no, we're having that conversation in our household about Nissan, the big Infiniti.
Nissan, Infiniti, yeah. Right? The ironic part for me is one of my favorite jobs, and it was my first job into the auto industry, was working at a local tint shop. And this was me between my freshman and sophomore year of college. And I got a job when I came back for the summer, and it was working for a tint shop to go pick up the cars from the dealership. The biggest account was Jackie Cooper. Remember that name, huh?
That's where my BMW came from, remember?
And which was a massive account for me here locally later in my life. And I loved, my favorite vehicle to pick up was Infiniti. And I always just felt, you know, you just sit down in a car and you kind of go, yeah, I could see this, you know, like, yeah. I see what they're doing, and I'm going.
It's a big topic in our household.
Maybe I should go back to the Infiniti world and start looking at that. If I liked it 20 something years ago, 20 something, almost 30 now, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for me, we're looking at the QX80 when I sell my BMW. I just, with this whole fiasco we've had with wrecking this, you know, having a DUI, you know, driver hit our car, I just need another big family SUV. So honestly, Suburban, Sequoia, another Lexus, QX80, those are all on the list. And every time I keep going back and saying, if I get a Suburban, I want to get the Premier level or the RST level or something like that, to get a little bit of extra. But you used cars have taken a massive hit. And I got to tell you, man, there's some of these that are coming back to earth to the point where you're like, man, I can get a pretty damn nice vehicle for not so much money. It's not 36 months ago. I mean, it's flipped in an instant on these dealers. You know, we haven't had a lot of car talk on here, but I'm here to tell you, man, I told everybody, come January, come November, December, January, if you're looking to buy, it's pretty damn good time to buy, because I'm seeing a lot of 5,000 off, 7,000 off. This started at 60 and now it's at 52. And I'm going, uh-oh, that flooring plan's starting to kick in and they're tired of paying that 7.5% interest or whatever they're paying on that vehicle. And it's starting to rack up, and great time to look around.
Hmm. So, you narrowed in or not?
I'm not narrowed in. I do like the Chevy Suburban Premieres. They're really nice. I've been in them before. And I do like the QX80. I really like that vehicle. I've actually talked to Wes, who's in our orbit, who knows a lot about that world, and said, hey, man, when I'm getting ready to buy, I'm going to give you a shout. I'd like to, you know, learn more about them. But it's funny you bring up Infiniti. Those QX80s have always been on my list of, but again, this goes back to, well, why don't you just buy an Armada? Well, I got news for you. There's a difference in those levels of cars. The reason I like the QX80 is I believe they're still operating the V8, which is a very good engine from them. And I don't want to step down to a V6 on a big, you know, SUV. I think that's probably the reason I won't go to Lincoln. You know, I do love the Navigator, but I believe they have the V6 in it. Don't quote me, but I'm almost certain. It does that EcoBoost engine does not give me a lot of confidence in a massive SUV, just like it didn't give me a lot of confidence in the Ford Raptor. Just doesn't give me a lot of confidence.
No.
But I have been looking at 2011 to 2014 Raptors with the V8, so I could end up anywhere here. I could end up anywhere. We need a 3-row. I'm going to end up with a 2011 Ford Raptor.
You could. And, you know, here's something that you could end up anywhere at is it doesn't matter almost to seem whatever Facebook group you go into that has to do with detailing. There's something that people always want to know. What is your least favorite part about detailing and why is it the interior?
Yeah. Right?
Like, this is interesting. It's become a thing almost inside of the business of detailing is, well, there was even people years ago, remember we joked about people that said, hey, don't touch interiors. We've elevated our brand, our company so far that, you know, when anybody even asks about an interior, we just, you know, send them down the way. Interesting.
Yeah.
I think I saw recently that guy's working for a brand now. But, you know, things happen. And one thing that doesn't happen is for some reason, people don't enjoy doing interiors. And I've always found that interesting. The newest episode that we put out for on our YouTube channel, great things coming this month. Next week is Trey. For everybody that wants to know how to install HyperClean Trey, go over to the HyperClean channel on YouTube. It's a HyperClean store on YouTube. We'll go over Trey. Next will be the glass coating for our windows. And then I love the finish of the month of us with a heavy discussion on polishing. Wow. Yeah. Do you need to prime a pad? Do you need to do all this stuff? How far do you work? That's a great video. But live right now is the introduction to the carpet system, which we are launching today at hypercleanstore.com. Go there. Now that you listen to it, you can check out the system. The interesting thing that I said in the video that you can see releasing is to me, one of the most satisfying things that you can ever do is the interior. I know we all love, it's my favorite. I love actually walking out to a car and going, oh, it's amazing, right? Like you look at the paint and you go, woo. But when you're driving the car, which is when you're in it the most, the interior is what is the most satisfying, whether you're driving the car or you're cleaning it. Absolutely, bar none for me, the most satisfying thing is the interior. Nick, are you an interior guy? I mean,
yeah,
what's satisfying for you?
I'm picky about interiors. I've said this forever. I get why people don't like interiors because most of the time, by the time somebody's coming to a detailer, we all know what their interior looks like, right? I mean, Marty, you know that's what sucks is that most people destroy their interiors. They come to you. They want it to back to new. They want to pay $100. Interiors can be frustrating. Because people don't realize how much work goes into an interior and you're climbing over seats and you're bending over and there's a lot of uncomfortable stuff about interiors. First and foremost, all the filth that you're around because somebody doesn't take pride in their car, right? But when I think about my experience as somebody owning a car, there's nothing better than riding around in your car and not stepping on dirt and crumbs and your steering wheel's clean and your you got a 6-speed manual or you got, you know, everything's clean. I think I look around and I see a lot of dust and I just hate being in the car. I hate being in the truck. I hate being in the SUV, right? I don't like it. And to the point when we got our rental here locally, he was like, we didn't have a chance to clean it. I said, don't clean it. We'll clean it at my shop. I mean, I just don't, I'm very particular about the way I like to ride around in an interior. But I understand the frustration from a lot of guys is that most customers don't want to pay that $250, $300, $400 to take a damaged interior and bring it back. There are plenty of people that will pay that, okay? Most likely, they wouldn't even let it get to that position. And then those interiors, to me, are enjoyable, right? I don't like filthy interiors. I don't like being around somebody that doesn't take pride in their car. So I understand why people don't like it. But I think if you're a car owner listening to this or you're somebody detailing, there's a middle ground where you're not just seeing destroyed interiors all the time. And you certainly shouldn't have to drive around a destroyed interior if you own the car. There's just too many easy products like Revive, Impress, our carpet system. I mean, I don't really see the argument of running a vacuum and doing a quick wipe down being that big of an issue consistently if I own the car.
No, and a lot of, right, this is a cool part of why you and I develop the products and the way we do it is that philosophy. A lot of the way we've been in business is keeping cars clean, not getting to the point of disgusting, not getting, you know, it, not getting your car fully scratched up to where it needs a full sand and heavy compound, not letting your interior get trashed because, hey, that's not the way that you want to enjoy your car. You don't want to drive around in a car that's disgusting. And the interiors is a major part of that. We joke around and it's a big deal. Glass cleaner. It was something that we, you know, we waited almost to one of the very end things, but we knew how important it was to be able to look out of a windshield and not have a bunch of stuff all over it, not have streak marks and have, you know, issues not getting the fog all the way off. I love hearing Sean recently talk to me about how up in Canada where they're doing, he's finding the best way to clean vape residue off of a car is with our glass cleaner. They haven't found anything that can do what you and I have developed.
Yeah.
So now it comes to carpet cleaning and the next sort of evolution of what we want to put out to show how we see the best way to clean carpets. And you got to start with Enzyme. The absolute number one way to start cleaning a carpet is to go after protein-based stains that are in the carpet. Now that's, hey, I took a sip of coffee, I put it back down the cup holder, I hit a bump, that's the worst. We've got this one part in our neighborhood that you have to kind of finagle around. So apparently we had like a massive earthquake this weekend here in Oklahoma, not too far, about maybe 2 hours outside of Tulsa, I think. I didn't even know about it, but you know, that what that happens to some of that for us is the road system and the bumps and these random things that you start happening. Well, once little bump of coffee goes onto the carpet, hey, if it sits there for long enough, it's going to leave a stain. In order to go after that protein-based stain, you need an enzyme. So,
and if you have creamer in there, imagine the smell. If you have creamer in that coffee, boy, oh boy. I think, you know, we're going to deep dive more of the carpet system for Saturday's episode. But I think there's something that you and I both know is competently being able to clean your carpets, DIY, professional, where, you know, a lot of us don't want to carry an extractor, don't want to have one in our shop. We don't want to, maybe some guys don't have access to steam. Maybe some do. How do I just competently clean my carpet and do it in a really simple and basic way without having to worry about, I got this level of alkaline in there and I got this level of acidity and I got to do this and I got to do that. I mean, you know about this stuff a lot more than me. You spent a lot of time on this carpet system. Matter of fact, I think we've been sitting on this about, what, 6, 8, 9 months, making sure. We went to some very high production places to have them test it.
Well, and that was a cool part about this, right? Our enzyme started one spot. And then by the time we got finished with it, we actually changed companies for our raw supplier of an enzyme that we found to be better. Like we actually, because once we decided to work on this, well, we actually improved it from the very first of it. And the cool part is the system that we've developed has come from 10 plus years of me being in seeing all these different chemicals that are out there, all these different shops, all these different ways that people clean vehicles, and going, hey, this is the best way to do it. And now to get to the point of finding the absolute best way to start and the best enzyme that I've found to be able to put into our formula. Wow, yeah, I love it.
I mean, look, as you know, it's been, carpets have been a thing in our career that we watched every carpet that we've ever touched get damaged. I mean, when you and I first started in this business, you remember extractors, they would leak water everywhere. Everything was extractor based. When I started, I'm probably similar to you. Like, you didn't have a shop, you didn't have an operation that wasn't extractor based. What that introduced was a moldy smell that you'll never forget, right? I mean, you remember cleaning a car in the summer And for me, I was at a wholesaler. So some of these cars would sit on the lot, you know, before they went back to auction or, you know, trying to sell it. So I'd get in the car again and I'd be like, oh my God, what is that smell? And so what'd you do? You took fragrance, bubble gum, cherry, pina colada, and you sprayed it down before it went to wherever it was going to go to be sold. And to see that that's still popular, let's be clear, it's still pretty damn popular to oversaturate things and to develop a system that allows, and if people go watch the YouTube video, they're going to see this. The thing that you really worked on with our team, with our suppliers, was very simple. How do we make it so somebody doesn't have to oversaturate a carpet to get it clean? How do we just competently keep this not only safe, but you don't have to do, you know, you guys hear this a lot. This idea of neutralizing acid and alkaline and all this stuff, that is very outdated. I mean, Marty, that's what, 20 plus years old? I mean, at least, if not 30 plus years old. And so you're seeing all these people saying you have to do all this to neutralize, to do this, to do that. It's just not, after Enzyme, we go into our complete, you know, product, and that just kind of finishes out any other stain that's not protein-based, as well as cleans up surface dirt, cleans up simple things, you know, and is safe to use with steam, safe to use with an extractor, because you're not sitting there trying to draw out all of this excess product. And I know you want to touch on this, but that's a lot of the crustiness left behind is this excessive use of chemical.
Yeah, overuse of chemical and overuse of extractor. You're right. Because of the wrong product, it doesn't matter if somebody's an extractor using this. The fun part as you get into people that go, well, I'm a rotary, I'm a DA, and you could then go into the different tool manufacturers. I'm a this DA polisher, I'm a that DA polisher. You go into the interior, you got guys that are just the same. Oh, well, I'd never use an extractor because I'm a steam guy. And then I'm a this brand steam guy because they're the best steam. Okay, cool. What about if the product could be used universally or without either? In the video that you're referencing that we've talked about from YouTube, I use a method where I'm using a brush wrapped with a microfiber towel. So trying to use the technology of a microfiber to pull everything off and then still be able to have hands that, listen, you've seen it, I've seen it, we've all seen it. You spray all this chemical all over the, and you start rubbing and your hands are slimy. They've got stuff all over them. You feel stuff in the carpet.
They get that white, like dry residue on your hand from certain. Yeah. Look, you can make your interior more enjoyable, professional DIY with the right stuff. That's our whole MO here. Revive makes your life easy. Impress makes certain other people's life easy. You know, this carpet system is the same way. Number one, you're not worried about dilutions. Pour it in your bottle and go. Just pour it in your bottle and go. Don't worry about the dilution, because let me tell you this. You can think you're so precise. We all can think that about ourselves. One of the problems in the extractor world is what? Guys putting the chemical directly into the extractor, not measuring it properly. All of a sudden, all this foam is coming out of the carpets, and you got to sit there and do what? If you don't go until the foam is gone, you got crusty carpets 100% of the time.
Yep.
So you put too much in your extractor, you put too much chemical in your mixture, all you're doing is fighting yourself. So this was done with simplicity in mind, man. Pour it in your bottle, go to work. Go to work. Don't worry about anything else. Just throw the enzyme down first, come back with the complete, do it the way you want to do it. Brush in a microfiber, steam. You want to use an extractor, use whatever you want. Because this is what modern technology tells us is the best way to do it. And I see too many guys, and I know there's some popular ones around, telling you got to neutralize your carpet. Well, to me, you're just using something that you don't have to use. You don't have to worry about that.
You're right. And so we will stay tuned. Next episode is going to be that deep dive where we go into the carpet system. So following this episode, you will hear that deep dive where we go and fully go over each of the products and how to use them and the benefits of each for you. All right, Nick, we're thinking something that I see around quite a bit. It could be somebody's coined this slogan. You could get it from one part of one industry over to the next, and it could be from a guy that actually has done something to maybe somebody that hasn't. And it's, hey, you can 10x your business. Hey, you can dramatically, you know, increase this if you buy this, right? You see it from people that want to sell a coaching system or an online, anything like that. They want people to buy into this because you'll 10x your growth. I've always wondered when I hear those and I think through them, you know, what is it that they're actually trying to do? Is it like, hey, if you add this thing to what you do, that's going to dramatically do this multiplication, right? Like add one makes one, right? And you keep adding. Or the flip side is maybe there's a subtraction. Maybe to actually grow, you actually need to subtract something from your business. And is that thing maybe something that's personal? When does something that personally we do on a regular basis that doesn't allow us to grow? Huh. That seems kind of simple and strange for most people because we think, hey, we should just add.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go ahead and say again, for I don't know how many times, you've heard it plenty, I've admitted openly that my worst trait as a human being is my lack of organization. Admitting that you're bad at something, is that actually good? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think it's something that we see around the business that we're in. I know I received some texts this week about this, is that, you know, part of fixing something is admitting that there's something wrong, right? I mean, think of Alcoholics Anonymous. What's like the first thing? Admitting you have a problem? You know, isn't that kind of what it is? Yeah, man. I mean, I've had to admit some pretty bad stuff about myself to fix it, right? Like, if I didn't admit it, then, you know, I've told everybody, you know, my temper early on sabotaged my business. I got no problem saying that. And I still fight it today. It's not like you ever get to perfect. You know, you don't ever fix anything 100%. I think there comes a time when addition by subtraction is a real thing. Right. And you and I have talked about organization. What I see at shops that I visited a lot over the last, 24 months. There is a level.
What did you see? Hold on. Like when you say disorganization in a shop, I'm going to say for a second, because let's all put myself back into that. I'll put myself in that hot seat. Right. Like the disorganization that you perceived of my towel system.
Yeah.
Like, is that what you mean? Like, you know, no, I think people throw their towels in a big bin. And
those are kind of minor. I mean, those are easy fixes. I see a lot of people, we talk about this a lot. I mean, and if you're part of the Sparta program, you know, this is one of the things we talk about in the Sparta program, why we have certain things, certain minimums when you order your first order are based around inventory control. So what a lot of detailers listening to us don't realize about the film part of the business, PPF, tint, those types of parts of the business, you could screw your business up with inventory control. Like, you could completely bankrupt yourself because you have too much inventory at a time, and you could completely lose out and piss off customers because you don't have the inventory to do the job.
The guys that were 60% off at Black Friday.
Yeah. You know, and you leave Christmas and you have to run a deal because you're sitting on so much inventory. That happens in every part of every business that exists in the world, right? So you see a lot of people and a lot of things that people didn't realize took place over COVID. It became even more important to be on top of your supplies. I mean, you and I knew companies trying to source raw ingredients from faraway places they've never had to do business with because they mismanaged their raw material inventory and were contacting us to help them.
Absolutely.
So a lot of people hear this stuff and they think it just applies to detailing or detailers. It's literally corporations can sink themselves if they're sitting on too much or too little inventory. And
Stellantis, who we're curious.
There you
Stellantis,
go.
Where are we going to be here?
A 1,000 days of inventory, right? So you see it in the car business. You see it in manufacturing of things that have nothing to do with detailing, where companies thought, we'll just run lean and mean. And then all of a sudden, a little hiccup, and they can't produce $1 million product that they promised to somebody. They lose the order. Game over. Look at the issues Boeing's having. We don't know if that's a manufacturing issue, a planning issue. What's in planning? Supplies. So are they just throwing airplanes out there that they just had not the right raw material? Who knows? They know that. We don't know that. I think when I go to shops, I see a dichotomy. You fall into one of two camps. You take inventory and the organization of your business top to bottom to the nth degree, right? Like you're so on top of it, and this does not mean you're saving money. We've had people that order 6 months, 9 months, 12 months of supplies at a time because they just want to make sure they can just crank through as many jobs. Some of them buy quarterly. You know, you'll see people in the film business, they just order pallets and pallets of film at a time, and that's when they place their orders, and that's how they control their inventory. But I've seen some disturbing to the other way where people have 100 boxes of film and are still having to go get film that they don't have on hand that day for a job. And they're scrambling their business, which means they're scrambling up their workforce. They're scrambling up their brain worrying about inventory all because they're not organized. Yeah. I mean, their team members are standing around and they're frustrated they're paying them to stand around. You're putting a lot of pressure on your business when you don't have it organized. And look, HyperClean doesn't have it all figured out, and VR doesn't have it all figured out. But the ones that are consistently trying to be the most organized are the people that aren't missing out on the money when it comes in, but they're also not having to run deals because they brought in so much inventory that it doesn't make any sense. So there's a balance. And again, I don't care if you're a one-man operation. I mean, you and I have stories out the wazoo about somebody overnighting a coating that they know they use on a weekly basis, and they have to overnight it every week because they run out of it, and they're paying $7,500 upcharge on a $200 bottle of coating. I mean, you and I watched that for close to what, 3 years? Every part of our life here. And so I think here's the thing, man. There's a lot of guys that look at organization, and it's not a strong suit for a lot of people. I get it. But this comes back to those people are usually losing money. They don't know where the money's going. They don't know why their finances are always in disarray. And this goes for personal life. I mean, dude, we all have strengths and weaknesses. If you're not organized, I don't think people realize the downstream effects, and it puts a lot of pressure on team members. I can tell you that. I've watched it firsthand.
Absolutely. And which is a big reason, this is the ironic part, right? Somebody who admits being completely disorganized on a regular basis, but prides in being as effective as Amazon and trying to get orders out the exact same day and relying on a team to get the orders out as fast as we possibly can, knowing we have to compete because the premier of the entire shipping online is somebody that says, we'll get it to you ASAP. So we have to also try and get things out. And I love that people go into the group or comment and go, man, awesome, the team at HQ did this. That's the team, right? Like absolutely the team being organized and doing a great job of that, which makes me ask the question, which I had to ask at one point in time, which I hope that everybody that listens start to ask themselves the question, great, if you want to achieve something, in a sense, everybody wants to be next level. I love that was the, you know, a name, like next level. Like we always do want to get to the next level. We want to achieve something more. We want to get something. Well, when do we start to realize that a personal habit, a personal flaw, a personal thing that we do will affect it? Or is a better question actually to say, how do we look 2020 without, you know, hindsight, they always say, is 2020. Yeah. How do we look 2020 without hindsight and looking into the future? Like, I mean, we only really know that we're messing something up if we make the mistake. At least that's the way I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But you have to admit there was a mistake, right? I mean,
I say it's funny.
Yeah, I think it's funny when you go out to shops that are really doing well and why they don't engage with the online detailing world. And what you realize is they're just simply too busy, right? The guys that are on top of it, they just got too much going on. And if you want to get your staff out, I witnessed something that the mismanagement of some film inventory kept their staff there till 6:30 or 7 o'clock that night. Had the inventory been in control, their whole staff would have gone home at 4:30. You don't think that wears on your team? Like, hey, we have set work hours. We work 9:30 to 5:30. If they know you're always going to get them out of there at 5:30, you got a leg up over a lot of employers, because a lot of employers and a variety of businesses struggle to get people out on time because, well, we had to run and get this at the hardware store. We had to go get this film from this supplier because we didn't have it. I watched it happen last week. There's no reason these cars shouldn't have been handled from 9:30 to 4:30. I mean, just no simple reason except the inventory wasn't there to do the job. So 2 hours in the middle of the day were wasted waiting on the film. That's a problem. But nobody in that building, except for the employees that I heard bitching about it, nobody running that business was like, yeah, we can't have this happen again. It was, this is a regular thing.
Is that what it is? They don't, most people, I guess, I had to make a decision at some point in time, and you and I have talked about this. You eventually have to, and which is why when you and I have had these things where we go, listen, Nick, we got to throw a stake in the ground. We got to make a point to go, this is the moment. So is that what most of us struggle with, is then actually going, hey, we've got to realize I'm the problem here.
Yeah.
This issue of not keeping people, or, you know, not being able to do things or whatever it is, if we can actually internalize that we're the issue, it's the next step to progress.
Yeah. Like, I'll let people in on a behind the scenes. I had a meeting for an hour today before we got on here with one of the biggest manufacturers in the world that wants to do business with you and I, wants us to produce some things for them. Marty, on such a beginning phone call, you know how many people from that corporation were on that phone call? 10. And people wonder why they get laid off. No need for 10 people on that call. Like, there wasn't even a need for two of them. We just need some basic answers. We're developing some stuff for them. Cool opportunity, cool people. I'm not saying any of that, but I'm going, there's no better use of the time of these 10 people than this. This isn't this big of a deal. Why did that happen? Because organizationally, they aren't organized on who handles this, who makes the decision, get them on the call, get this handled. And that's a massive corporation, publicly traded corporation. Take that all the way down to a small business with a couple employees. The minute that organization, controlling your inventory, doing those types of things gets out of whack, you're putting pressure on the whole system. And now nobody knows what to do. And I've been guilty of it. Okay, this isn't like, I'm speaking just in general. You and I screw it up. I mean, you and I screwed something up the last week, right? That we were supposed to have handled. And you and I didn't do a great job of it. So it's a constant battle, number one.
Community.
And you gotta be okay with that. I think guys think you're gonna get to a point like everything everywhere is gonna be handled. I haven't seen that company. I haven't seen that individual. I'm not that person. it's all about the effort you're going to put into getting better. Hey, I got a problem. I got to fix it. Hey, this problem popped up. I'm going to fix it. But I'm not going to fix it to fix it today. I'm going to fix it so I hopefully avoid it from happening in the future.
Okay.
That's tough.
It is tough. And there's plenty of us, myself included, that this is another aspect that you and I have talked about. You have. We've talked about this, that I want to throw it out there to kind of chop it up a little more is, well, maybe some of it is the way we were raised. Is it our DNA? Is it us as a human? It's the way my mind is? Or is it the way my father talked to me and my relationship with my father determined this, the way I'm going to now interact in life as a 45-year-old man?
Yeah.
Listen, you can go into any discussion.
I think you got to ask your question here. How long are you going to make an excuse? We were all raised a certain way. We all had certain positives and negatives of how we were raised. Everybody has some type of story why things weren't in their favor or they were or whatever. You and I talked about this earlier, referencing some things we have seen and some things we're involved in. And you know what, man? One of the most popular excuses that we all use, and I'd say every one of us, is, well, that's just how I thought things were supposed to be done. You know, this happens around your house. This happens. I mean, just happens. But man, you reach the age of 30. You're your own person at that point. It's all about your decisions. What are you going to change? Are you going to buy quality stuff? Are you going to buy the knickknacks and the trashy stuff your family bought when you were younger? Are you going to change as a consumer? I was brought up in a family. We didn't have a ton of money. So, you know, we bought a lot of things that weren't extremely valuable. I'm sure you're in the same boat, right? Like, it wasn't always the highest quality stuff. That doesn't mean that I have to live my life that way, or I have to blame what I have and the decisions I make on what took place when I was 15 years old. I mean, it's convenient to do that. And a lot of human beings do that. You know, it's like, you know, anything in the world. Look, man, if you're not making enough money and bills are tight, you know what the simple question is to ask? How the hell do I make more money? Am I working long enough? Am I taking too much time off? I mean, there's simple things to look at. You know, am I doing too much outside of business that's causing me to struggle inside of business? This all sounds simple, but look, man, I've been guilty of it as anybody. There's times I just didn't address the problem in the room. And what it comes down to is addressing the problem in the room.
And it is, you know, a lot of us find ourselves in a situation where we go, hey, I've got to progress here because, you know, you guys are talking about, hey, was it something that maybe the way I was raised, is it something my own personal flaw? You know, where are we at here? Because, you know, I could think of a bunch of different ways that we go with this. And
you can go a lot of different ways. You can. But as we talk to people about quality products, as we talk to people about becoming a smarter consumer, you know, pulling away from people who are putting out information that's not of value, right? And we talk about this in the detailing space a lot. You can't always blame someone else, right? I mean, because at the end of the day, it's going to be your wallet. It's going to be your money. It's going to be you taking care of your family or your future. And so when we think about this, the blame game doesn't get us anywhere. And I've played the blame game plenty of times in my life, right? Like, I'm not judging everyone else. I'm telling you, we all do it. But you and I see a rise of people thinking that because of this XYZ of how I was raised is why I do things this way. And Marty, you don't understand. It's like, no, I think I do, man. We all have that stuff in our past. All of us. Me, you, the world.
You had to get over things. I had to get over things. Right? Like, it is what it is. Like, it would be great if we were all brought into a life, which we've joked about, right? We've actually thrown some things. We're going, right, this guy started on second base because his dad did this, and then he got to inherit it. We would all have, right? Some of us, maybe not me, I actually enjoy we talk about the climb, but I've had to work through some personal things. And at the end of the day, you're right. It has come down to, am I going to stop making excuses for my bad habits, for the things that I do, and try and progress out of it? Listen, it's not just business in a sense. Let's think for a second. Hold on before we get out of here. You got to go into also your car life. I mean, there's a lot of things that I watched my dad do, the way he handled his vehicle, that made me go, whoa, I don't want to do that at all. I don't want to change my own oil. I don't want to change my own brakes. I would much rather go do something that I enjoy. Now, I get it. And there's still, this is an interesting part of being in that Porsche group, is there is still a large population that wonder, should you have somebody go take care of it, or should you take care of it yourself? Should you go to a dealership, or should you go to a specialty shop, right? Like, who teaches people where to go interact inside of? How do I then take care of my car?
Yeah. I mean, all this stuff, right? I mean, you can extrapolate this, like you said, over life. You know, and the other thing is, this shit doesn't get fixed overnight. Yeah. You know, the mistakes you make and the things you wish you could change. Like, dude, I got a laundry list. I don't know about everybody else. I got a laundry list of shit I wish I did differently.
Yeah, and one for me was actually taking the oil out of a vehicle, putting it in that little thing, and then going to like Pep Boys or O'Reilly's and asking them, hey, are you going to take this? And I thought I was supposed to, like, the amount of time and bullshit of changing your own oil? Come on.
Yeah, I mean, look, if it's something you enjoy, and I understand people that change their own oil because they're like, I want to know that it was done right. I want to know that the products I want in there are in there. I get both sides of it.
Okay.
I choose to do what I enjoy with my car. And we talk about this all the time, especially those that are detailers or really, really heavy enthusiasts. It doesn't make sense to us that people don't take pride in their car. But that all traces back to something else. They're not admitting to themselves that they got a problem with their car. They're not admitting that they're driving around in filth, that they pay, you know, $1,000 a month for this car and it looks like trash, or they're paying $2,500 or $3,500 a month for the car. I mean, there's outrageous payments out there on very nice vehicles that people trash, right? And we all look at it because we care about how our car looks and we judge them, but it all stems from they haven't fixed some type of problem to take more pride in the things they own, whatever that is, somebody's house, somebody's car, somebody's whatever. And there's a variety of ways of taking pride. Whether you own a car and you don't care about cars, you can take pride in your car, have a detailer come out, take it to the dealership to have it serviced. That's taking pride. It's not the way that we all take pride, but it's taking pride. Your car always looks good. Your car is always maintained. You're probably going to have a car that looks really great for a long time. Or when you trade it in, you'll be able to look at the salesman and go, yep. He'll go, man, that thing's in great shape. There's a pride in that. That pride comes from somewhere. Or the lack of pride comes from somewhere. And the lack of pride, usually for all of us in the car appearance world, we kind of look at it and go, why don't they care? Well, it's just a problem they haven't admitted to themselves. And that goes to whether you're organized or not organized, it just goes down the laundry list. And I got to make this clear for a millionth time. I have a lot of shit that I need to change. You got stuff to change. Again, you look at some of the things we look around the world, a lot of it just comes down to we all just don't admit, hey, man, I got a problem. Got to try to fix it. It's that simple. You don't got to be embarrassed about it.
If I want to get to the next level of whatever, fill in the blank, business, success, enjoying the next car, enjoying the car I have now, like the next thing I want, whatever it is, having actually a clean, reasonable, and everything right there that way. I think clean and cleanliness is absolutely the best way to enjoy your car life. So I got to end with this and have everybody go back to watch the YouTube video or go to hypercleanstore.com, because if you need to clean carpets, the carpet system is out. Hypercleanstore.com, start with Enzyme, then go to Complete. And hey, next episode is the deep dive into both of this.
All right, guys, we'll see you next week.